this is the art world's Me Too moment. We're now talking about that it's just not right for us in the West to possess an entire culture and to say, well, they can't take care of it themselves. We're preserving it for them. It's just not acceptable anymore to own another people.
Museums tell stories through what they put on show, how they display them, how they label them. But sometimes the stories they tell are not the full stories. The stories of how these objects came to be in the museum's collection in the first place.
150 years ago, Britain routinely carried out military operations across the globe. And in the process of these military campaigns, they captured cultural property and sometimes they razed entire cities to the ground.
And many of those objects are here at the Victoria and Albert Museum today.
And many of these objects were then taken back to Britain and then given to the various museums by government or by participants in the campaign.
Welcome to Analysis with me, David Baker. In this episode, I'm trying to get to the heart of a debate that's dominating Europe's cultural institutions at the moment. Should they, we, return works of art, objects that European countries acquired from across the world at the height of their empires? And if so, which objects and to which countries? I've started at the Victoria and Albert Museum in southwest London with the museum's provenance curator, Jack Schumacher.
I think it presents a real problem to museums who still hold these objects in a time when our values have changed dramatically. So, for example, it would be unthinkable for the museum to acquire objects that were, let's say, looted in Syria or Afghanistan, or archaeological objects which were illegally excavated and exported in the 1980s. There are strict ethical guidelines in place for new acquisitions, and these guidelines obviously don't apply to the past, but it's sort of creates an interesting moral discrepancy, right? So between sort of our present-day ethics and the objects that still remain in the storerooms and galleries of the museum. And it's a real challenge for many museums, and our decision was it's not our responsibility that the objects are here, that's something that happened in the 19th century. Our responsibility is to deal with it in a responsible and positive manner. And that starts by acknowledging the circumstances in which these objects came to the museum.
We're familiar with this debate around things like the Elgin marbles, which Greece would like returned by the British Museum to be put on show in Athens. This year, Jamaica has requested the return of a set of wooden carvings made by the island's indigenous peoples in the 15th century and currently in storage in the British Museum. Ethiopia still wants its Magdala treasures back from the Victoria and Albert Museum. We're going to be looking at those later in the programme. And it's estimated that more than 10 million antiquities were removed from China over the 19th and early 20th centuries, mostly by Western and Japanese imperialist powers. Western nations have mostly resisted calls to repatriate artworks, for reasons we'll hear more about later. But recently, things took a different turn. Just months after coming to power in 2017, France's President Emmanuel Macron made his priorities clear in a trip to Burkina Faso.
The first remedy is culture. In this area, I cannot accept that a large share of several African countries' cultural heritage be kept in France. There are historical explanations for it, but there is no valid, lasting, and unconditional justification. African heritage cannot solely exist in private collections and European museums.
Even before that visit, he'd already commissioned a report that would upend the European art world's attitude to repatriation. François Nissin was France's culture minister at the time. I spoke to her on the phone to the south of France. So why the change of heart?
You are more rich when you know your culture. You are more confident when you know who you are. So you need to know your story, to know your culture, to be proud of them. So all the country of the people must have access to their culture. So the problem is a very, very important problem. After, you have to think how to do it, of course. It's a question to study with all the African continent and all the people who need to be in contact with their culture and we must think of how we are going to do that. But the question is that we must open the museum and we must not keep it in private collection and only for us. And you know, it's not easy because in France we are so conservative with the great museum. It was not easy at all.
The report, published in 2018, argued for a complete transfer of property back to Africa. And Macron immediately pledged the return of 26 objects taken by French forces from South Benin in 1892. But the report also identified 46,000 objects in one French museum alone that it said should be repatriated too. Macron stopped short of pledging to enact all of the report's recommendations, instead suggesting that Western cultural institutions should explore alternatives to repatriation, such as sending objects back to their original countries on long-term loans. But his words and actions nevertheless reignited the debate. So how are Britain's museums responding?
I'm Neil Spencer, and I'm the keeper of Nile Valley and Mediterranean collections here at the British Museum. Obviously, we're aware that there's a number of objects in the collection that are the subject of debate, and people posit that they should go back to certain countries. However, we feel very strongly that the critical mass of the collection as held together is of incredible benefit, not just for us as curators in the museum, but for the world as a whole. There are several thousand objects from there in the National Museum in Cairo, so the Egyptian Museum. What we can do here that's very different to what they can do with that collection in Egypt is, as our curators research that material and find out that they're not just looking at Egyptian material and Greek material, they're also looking at Cypriot material, Levantine material from southern Italy, is we have big collections from those places. So you can start to look at comparisons and look at styles, knowledge, ideas across time. And that's not possible in a museum where you only have collections from that country.
This is a pretty convincing argument that you'll hear from museums across the world. It's better to have objects from different cultures displayed together than for them to be split up. And Neil Spencer has a second point to put forward in favour of keeping objects where they are.
I'd also like to kind of balance the discussion a little bit because, you know, I spend a lot of time working in Egypt, Sudan, I've also worked in India, and of course there are objects that arouse passions and people ask for them back, sometimes states ask for them back, but the majority of the conversations we have don't revolve around those subjects at all. So when we're talking to curators and exhibition goers in these countries, we're often finding they're interested in the interconnections and they're also interested in skill sharing and expertise sharing with us. And that tends to be what comes up again and again when we think about how we're going to redisplay our collections in the future. I'm very clear that it's not about us deciding how we redisplay them, but it's involving colleagues from around the world about the stories we should tell. So that's the kind of conversation we find we're having much more in these countries than the question of individual object restitution.
It's a nice image of multicultural cooperation, but not everyone agrees. Alice Proctor runs a project called Uncomfortable Art Tours, where she takes people around museums, including the British Museum, showing them objects that she feels should be sent back to their countries of origin. I met her in a cafe nearby.
I have a great fondness for museums, and the work that I do comes from my love of museums. What I would like to see is an acknowledgement that not every piece is contested, not every object within these museums is sought for repatriation, but if, for example, some pieces were sent back to their communities of origin, in the absence of those sculptures, those objects, there's still a story to tell. There are still pieces within the collection that are not contested or that represent the response of people in the UK, of people in empire to this history. It's using different objects. It would require museums to be a little more creative with how they tell these stories. It's not enough to just put a thing on show and assume that it speaks for itself. Sometimes the absence of an object is more effective, more evocative than its presence, because then you can talk about what it means to different people, why it's no longer there, and acknowledge that history. There's a phrase that I use a lot in my work, which is display it like you stole it, which comes back to this idea that you have to be honest about how these pieces get into the collections in the first place. If you're going to repatriate things, if you're going to acknowledge this argument for repatriation, for restitution to the communities that create these pieces, you have to first go through this phase of changing how you display these stories, changing how you make them visible. And I think if we had a real reckoning that acknowledged that, that allowed the museums to do that, there would be a cultural shift as well. Sometimes you have to acknowledge that your love, your appreciation for this particular object doesn't outweigh the right of the community that made it, the community that should continue to possess it.
Museums are understandably nervous about this topic, and the British Museum wouldn't allow us to record Alice inside the building. But one route museums are beginning to go down is to be more open about the provenance of objects in their collections, how they came to be there in the first place. Jack Schumacher at the Victoria and Albert Museum took me to a gallery which has on display the Magdala treasures that Ethiopia has asked for back.
We are going to see two objects which were seized by British troops in 1868 in a military campaign against the Ethiopian ruler Tewodros II, who was defeated at Magdala. And subsequently, the British troops seized objects of gold and silver, sacred texts, etc., from his treasury and transferred it to Britain.
And these are two objects that have been in the news a bit recently,
yes,
because I think Ethiopia wants them back. Is
exactly,
that right?
Yeah. Okay, so what happened was that in 2008, the Ethiopian government made a claim for the return of these objects.
Okay, so here they are. We've just
here
got
they
to
are.
The cabinet.
So you can
you,
see
you
a
tell us what we're seeing
this is a beautiful crown in the style worn by priests in the Ethiopian Orthodox Church and a gold chalice.
Well, the crown itself is gold. It's like about 9 inches high, about 9 inches across in three circular layers of amazingly intricate gold detail. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah, that's indeed. So these are objects which were taken by force in the 19th century. They were given to the museum by various branches of government. They are two of about 60 objects.
Various branches of British government.
Of the British government.
They were taken by force by the British.
By the British.
I think after a battle in Ethiopia.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
After the battle, they were taken to Britain, and then the British government decided to deposit them in museums.
Okay.
So objects that were seized during that campaign are, for example, in the British Museum, the British Library, and the Victoria and Albert Museum, mm-hmm. and a wide range of smaller museums.
Mm-hmm.
So they were taken at a time when British troops routinely captured cultural property in armed conflicts, and would sometimes, on occasion, seize entire cities to the ground, which is also what happened at Magdala in 1868. So these objects were given to the museum. They are now part of our permanent collections. And in 2008, the Ethiopian government made a claim for the return, for the repatriation of these objects.
Mm-hmm.
And the negotiations stopped after a while. And in 2018, the museum took the 150th anniversary of the battle as the occasion to curate a special display about the battle, which talks not just about the objects, but also provides information on how they came to the museum. So the purpose was twofold, really. It was sort of to celebrate these objects as incredible examples of Ethiopian craftsmanship and also to provide a platform for the debate about the restitution of cultural property and to acknowledge the circumstances in which they came.
Ethiopia has rejected the idea of a long-term loan. But in the UK, at least, there's an additional problem that, whatever their feelings about the ethics of the debate, museums are forbidden by law to repatriate objects from their collections.
So the situation is that the museum cannot remove an object like that from its collection. So these laws were designed to protect the collections of the national museums, to prevent, let's say, a museum director from selling off or destroying objects which are not considered fashionable anymore. So that we can...
But, you know, the president of France can say this can go back. It's not hard for us to imagine changing a law here to allow the V&A to send something so obviously from Ethiopia back to Ethiopia.
Yeah, but the current situation is that the law prevents us from doing such a thing.
So it's a governmental thing. The government needs to do something.
It's something for Parliament to decide. As a museum, we have to sort of operate within certain legal parameters, which means that we can't do something that the law doesn't allow us to do. The most a museum can do, the most a museum like the V&A can do, is to offer to return these objects on the basis of a long-term loan to ensure that they can be appreciated and studied not just in South Kensington, but also in the country of origin.
That argument doesn't go down well with people acting for the other side. Christopher Marinello is a barrister who specialises in questions of provenance, and in particular the restitution of artworks looted by the Nazis.
I don't care. I don't care what the law says, because morally, ethically, that Nazi-looted work of art has to go back to the family of the victims. And it did, and it does, and it will, and so will these objects from Africa. Once we get past them grandstanding on the law, We know about the law. We created it. We're going to protect our possession. But, you know, it has to be changed. As a lawyer, I can say that the laws are created by the winning side. They were created by the colonial powers to protect what they looted. Look what the Russians have done with respect to Nazi-looted works of art. There are hundreds of thousands of objects in Russian museums and collections that are looted and stolen. But they have declared that everything on Russian soil is trophy art to make up for the 12 million people that were killed and because of the war. So they're going to hold on to everything.
Do you think there's an appetite here in Britain to change the law?
Not now, but I think we're beginning to talk about it. And I think that's a good first step. And I don't want to isolate Europe and the UK. You know, the United States has its own issues with Native American peoples and objects that were taken from the Native Americans and that are on display and in collections. This is a worldwide discussion of those who have against those who have not.
In 2009, the UK government introduced legislation allowing museums to restitute objects looted or forcibly sold between 1933 and 1945. But Christopher Marinello believes this should be extended to objects brought to Britain at the height of its colonial power.
When we talk about doing the right thing, I firmly believe that we need to repatriate cultural heritage to African countries that have had these objects looted from them by colonial powers.
Because they were looted. Is that why?
Because they were looted.
One problem is the question of where we return works of art to. Back at the British Museum, Neil Spencer shows me an interesting case in point.
Where have you brought us and what have you got to show us here?
So we're here in one of the Roman galleries upstairs at the British Museum, packed with people, as you can see, and we're standing in front of the bronze statue head of Augustus, the first Roman emperor. And this tells a really interesting story in relation to these discussions about cultural property, imperialism and colonialism.
So this is a larger-than-life head. It's a bronze cast, is that right?
It was originally a larger-than-life cast bronze statue, possibly made of different materials. It's only the head and the neck that survives it in one piece. This was a statue of a Roman emperor set up at the southern limits of the Roman Empire in what is now modern Egypt in Aswan. However, so this was a colony of Rome, the breadbasket of Rome. However, it wasn't found in Egypt nor in Rome. It was found in northern Sudan, and it was found under the steppe of a temple to a Nubian god by a British archaeologist in 1910, John Garstang. Now, why was it there? Well, this was the seat of the Meroitic Empire, one of the great urban civilizations of ancient Africa. So this is a civilization that lasted from about 2nd century BC to 2nd century AD, so contemporary with the Roman Empire. And they were enemies of the Roman Empire, and at times they actually attacked Egypt and took over parts of Egypt from the Roman Empire. And during one of those expeditions, they looted the statue and brought the head back and buried it under the threshold of the temple doorway. So as you went in to worship this Nubian temple god, you would be trampling over the defeated Roman emperor.
Wow, humiliating the Roman Augustus. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. And it evokes all sorts of imagery, such as the toppling of the Saddam Hussein statues,
sure, sure.
And so on. Statues are such a powerful kind of lightning rod for these discussions. But it's interesting in terms of the debate about where objects should be. You know, this is in the British Museum and can tell that story, but if it was to be repatriated, would it be to Egypt or to Rome, Italy,
or to Sudan? Yeah,
we grapple with some of that here. Yeah. Where do you display it? It's in a Roman gallery here. It could also be in our Nubian gallery.
To be fair, Neil Spencer's chosen a handy example to make his case. No one's actually asking for the head of Augustus back. But it does show how complicated the issue of restitution can be. It's not just as simple as looking at a map. Are modern-day Greeks, for example, really the same people who built the Parthenon in the 5th century BC? Christopher Marinello, though, is not impressed.
That's a really condescending argument, and I hear it all the time. You know, when you talk about ancient peoples, you know, objects stolen from, looted from ancient Rome, do they belong to the current Republic of Italy? Do the Parthenon marbles belong to the current population of Greece? You know, you don't have to go that far back when you're talking about colonial looting. You only have to go back 125 years to see what the British, the French, the Italians, the Germans did to the African continent. if you want to focus on ancient objects, you know, the marbles are a good place to start.
Do the Parthenon marbles belong to
the
people of Greece?
In my view, they belong to the people of Greece, and they would be well served there, and the world can enjoy them there. It's the same argument I make for the return of colonial objects to Africa. And when was the last time you felt the need to go to Kenya to visit their museums? There's nothing there to see. 90%, they say between 90 and 95% of African cultural heritage is outside of Africa. What if it was there in fabulous museums that we could all visit? It would steamroll helping the people, helping tourism. It's a great place to start.
One solution to this problem is that we use technology. With 3D printing, we can now make almost perfect replicas of many of the pieces that are in Europe's museums. And that's not as new an idea as it may seem.
So one argument in this debate is actually we could make a copy of an object and maybe keep that and send the original back or vice versa. And Jack and I have come to one very famous gallery here in the Victoria and Albert Museum where exactly this was done 100, 200 years ago. And we're right in front of a copy of Trajan's Column from Rome. Jack, what do you think about this idea of making a copy of the object?
So the idea behind making replicas like the one that you can see around us was to make these objects accessible to audiences who were unable to travel, let's say, to Italy.
Right.
So that they were able to study and appreciate them here in South Kensington. And I think creating replicas is a very exciting opportunity to sort of address some of these issues, but I don't think that's the solution. So what I can envision, for example, is we talked about sending objects back on the basis of a long-term loan. Whilst these objects are in their country of origin, we could place a replica on display in South Kensington so that people could sort of still sort of engage with the object, but also with the difficult history and the sort of the troubling inheritance and the way in which we try to deal with it, and to use this to, so that we can still have these debates, which are incredibly important. I think that we can also send replicas of objects to the countries of origin while we sort out the repatriation of these objects. The ability to make copies that are almost indistinguishable from the original is incredibly exciting, but it's not the solution to the repatriation debate. That's clear to me.
Alice Proctor, who runs the Uncomfortable Art Tours, likes the idea of copies, at least as a first step.
It's such an interesting conversation to have. Copies have a real value. You can create replicas and they can be used by the universities and the schools and that sort of thing. I understand, of course, that copies will never have quite the cultural power and value of their originals. But if it's purely a situation of going into a space like the British Museum or another national institution anywhere in the world and wanting to see that sort of narrative, that classic art historical thing of here is how the sculpting of the human form has progressed, or here is how the history of architecture has developed over time, those sort of nice chronological linear narratives, there's no reason that we can't do that with copies. We're already doing that with copies. I would love to see that. They will never have the same display value because of the way that we construct value in terms of how we understand kind of the power, the authenticity of the original object as giving some sort of transformative, intimate, almost spiritual experience when you see it. And there is always going to be a power in seeing the original piece. But for many of the functions of a museum, a replica can do some of that work.
Why is there a power in seeing the original piece?
I think a lot of the power in seeing an original piece comes from the way that we think about art and that we teach art. We still place so much stock in, you know, the hand of the master, the idea that something has been touched by one of these great ancient geniuses. And to be fair, in order to reframe that, we'd have to completely rethink how we value art, how we value genius and intellect and that sort of thing. And that's a pretty massive project.
This debate about whether or not we return works of art to their countries of origin goes to the heart of our feelings about colonialism and about museums. In my heart, I do feel objects should go back to where they came from, if nothing else because people there seem to have a greater right to see them than I do as a resident of the United Kingdom. But I'm also torn. I love visiting the British Museum, which is just down the road from where I live, and looking at and learning about objects that have come from elsewhere in the world. And I'll miss them if they're repatriated. But the most significant thing I've noticed in making this programme is how little we hear in this debate from people who live in those countries themselves. As people like Alice Proctor and Christopher Marinello point out, for us to decide what goes back, where and when, is kind of just another colonialism. So I'd like to leave the last part of this programme to someone on the other side of the debate, Juma Ondeng, who spoke to me on the phone from Kenya.
Not me as an institution, as part of National Museums of Kenya, but me as a Kenyan, I would say there are a number of objects that are in British Museums collection that I feel strongly should be brought back. I'll give you an example of Kiticha Enzi, which has been on display at Sainsbury's Gallery, and it was taken from We to Kingdom at the end of 19th century during a punitive expedition by the British troops. We know that there are those museums which, as part of colonial legacy, acquired objects illegally, and so it deprived local people their cultural heritage and their cultural production. When most of the objects that left, especially those acquisitions that were done illegally and are culturally significant objects, deprives people of their identity. And we have a number of objects in European museums that we feel should come back. It's about identity, but there's also the feeling of hopelessness and bad memory, because we know how some of those objects left the continent and left the country. And so we are talking of a situation where, I'll give an analogy, someone breaks into your kraal, takes away your animals, and then you find them in their kraal, but you have no power to take it back because of the dominance of whoever stole your animals. So it's the power relation thing. So you see the objects, but you are helpless, even if you know that they were illegally taken away from your country, from your people. There's nothing you can do.
I totally get that. Sure, we here in Europe can argue that our museums are world-class centres of excellence because of the objects they contain. But maybe we should think the other way around. What if 95% of the United Kingdom's cultural heritage was on display, or even in storage, outside the country, in places that would be hard or even impossible for most of us to visit? Wouldn't we want those pieces back?